Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
There's always this friction that goes on between the regulating side, the regulation side of the industry, and the practitioners that say, okay, you know, where do you draw the line? You know, regulators would always, you know, and I look, I'm very close with the regulators, so I'm not trying to say that they can't, you know, that what they do is bad. As a matter of fact, my niece just married one.
He had a secret formula, and nobody could look and see what the secret formula was, kind of like the Wizard of Oz.
And every month, Madoff's victims receive detailed monthly statements showing trades and investments that investigators now say he has admitted never really existed.
There's always this friction that goes on between the regulating side, the regulation side of the industry, and the practitioners that say, okay, you know, where do you draw the line? You know, regulators would always, you know, and I look, I'm very close with the regulators, so I'm not trying to say that they can't, you know, that what they do is bad. As a matter of fact, my niece just married one.
We're in the money. We're in the money. We've got a lot of what it takes to get along. We're in the money.
From Schmuck to Goniff, that's the name of today's show. From Schmuck to Goniff. The kind of guy that spit on you all your life. The kind of guy that wouldn't let you clip the hedge at his country club. The kind of guy that would have his doorman throw you out of the front of his building, of which he was the president of the co-op board. And, you know, you don't know where to turn when you see a thing like this. So I turn back to the Rock of Ages, because if you think this is the first or the last time a Bernie Madoff is going to appear on the planet, you're wrong. And if you think that America, the entire financial system, is run by George Bush and the Democrats, and they're one and the same, by the way. I mean, how many years have I called them Democans or Republicrats? Since 1994, when I began in local radio, it's a one-party system with two shells and no P inside either shell. When are you going to wake up to the fact that there's one scam and it's called the government? So you go back to the Rock of Ages. What is the Rock of Ages? The Bible. What did Isaiah say? Isaiah said, in that day a man shall cast away his idols of silver and his idols of gold, which they made for themselves to worship, to the moles and to the bats, to go into the clefts of the rocks, etc. You can read it yourself. In other words, there's nothing left at the end of the day but you and God. Now, they used to say that there are no atheists in a foxhole. I wonder if they can say there are no atheists in the country club, the Palm Beach Country Club. I wonder if they can say there are no atheists left in the Boca Raton country clubs. Because I got news for you. People who turned from God a long time ago are suddenly crying and screaming and imploring and begging and saying, I didn't mean it. I didn't want to turn away. I wasn't serious, although I didn't go into a temple for 35, 40, 50 years. I really didn't believe. I thought it was for my grandchildren. God, please let the government bail me out. There must be a way for me to get back my money. There's got to be a way that I can get my money back. Please make the schmucks bail me out. You know, years ago, I was in Florida. I stopped going there when my mother, God rest her soul, passed away years ago. And, in fact, last night was her memorial. I lit a candle for her memory. I think she died 5 years ago. And I cooked a tarragon chicken, if you want to know the truth. And I just thought of her. I know she would have loved the chicken. She was a great cook in her own way. I drank a half a bottle of French wine, F-R-E-N-C-H, Bordeaux. It's the only wine I can drink without getting a smashing headache. I don't know what they do. Everywhere else, they jiggle the wine around. They put stuff. And I made the tarragon chicken, as I said. Whatever. I don't know. It was very nice. And then I started to sing Billy Bones afterwards on the stereo to the dog. You know the song I like from Billy Bones, Billy Bones, because it's a, you know, the English and the Irish sea shanties were built upon, based upon tragedy. These guys were dying all the time at sea. They led a horrendous life, seamen. So they developed, I don't know how to put it, cynical songs about dying and death. They knew they would die, you know. So, and then I was singing and this and that. But here we come back to today. And I remember in 2000, I was in Florida. And I watched the election between Bush, oh God, and Al Corleone, the psychopath. I'm convinced Al Corleone one day will be found to be psychopathic and put in a mental hospital. I mean, I've watched this guy for years. He's a nerd. You know, Bernie Madoff is a con man. We know that. And look what he got away with. But he's not the only one. Al Gore is a con man. He's been telling the world's coming to an end. The ice caps are melting in 5 years. And the schmucks say yes. And Obama appoints Carol Browner to now run the Global Warming Commission or Global Warming Czar. She's going to save the world from global warming. And they're shivering their arses off wherever they're talking about this. They're psychotic. Don't you understand it? That you're surrounded by a nation of psychosis and psychotics. They're running everything. They're mostly found in academia and in government. The craziest people in America are found in academia, number one, and in government, number two, with the largest majority, but not exclusively, on the Democrat side. They're still talking about global warming, and Al Corleone, I'm convinced, is insane. I'm convinced he's crazy. So, in the year 2000, as I said, I was watching the election between Bush and Corleone, and I watched the people of Florida because they sickened me. You remember when I wrote that in my book, Psychological? Many of you bought the book now. It's approaching a very nice number. I'm not going to boast about it. I'm glad you have it. Yes, thank you for buying it. But I remember I wrote the poem called, I called it Election Results Year 2000. It's on page 121. It really should be renamed Gulfstream Liberals or Stand-Up Stalins or Trotskys and Delis or Bypassed Bolsheviks and Buicks. Because some of the lines in this poem about these Gulfstream liberals from Palm Beach down to about Deerfield Beach was prescient. You know, and I want to play it for you right now on the Savage Nation. I want you to see how I looked right through them. I looked through them like Madoff did, but I didn't try to rip them off. I tried to ridicule them into an awakening. And guess what? They're still schmucks. Only they're broke schmucks now. Listen to this. 38 states said yes to Bush. 12 states said yes to Gore. Are some states more equal than other states? South Florida, for example, the land of the New York Communistic Front, the millionaires grifting off the welfare state, pretending to each other the moral indignation of the downtrodden, acting with heads held high and jaws thrust out as victims of the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire, Lexus liberals with Volkswagens on their brains, condo commies, lunchroom Lenins, stand-up Stalins, miserable Maos, pathetic Pol Pot Marxists using black street gangs as their body armor, stealing ballots, grifting SSI, faking disabilities, voting for Al Gore, all in a day's work, South Florida, the land of sunshine, schmoozing, and now stupidity. The whole world now knows New York Communist Democrats are too stupid to vote straight, but smart enough to twist the truth when their benefits are threatened. South Florida, the land of suntan Trotskys and Delis, bypassed Bolsheviks and Buicks, air-conditioned Chays and condos, loud, lewd losers in limbo, stuck between their investments and their liberalism, lost to their religion, fervent in their non-belief, save the DNC, their new religion, corned beef commies, buffet bolshies, jogging jokesters stuck in Camelot fantasies, Kennedy, their last idol, a drunk, profligate warmonger covered for by his beautiful wife, Hillary, their personal Evita Peron, Bill, their shameless shagets, Tipper, their tipsy donut, Al, their Shabbos goy, South Florida, the land of sun and SOBs. I wrote that in 2000. I mean, I think it was pretty good. You know, you should applaud, truthfully, if you're in a room, sit and applaud, because I deserve it. Because everything I wrote in there was about these people, basically, let's say on the wealthier part of the scale. But they're the same. They're the same mentality. I wonder how many of them voted in New York and in Florida in the presidency. I would say that 95% of them voted and gave money to the Democrats. In fact, it's well known that they did. Madoff did. Madoff was a big Dem donor. So That's a big story. We also want to talk today, I know you do, about Shoegate on the Savage Nation, because the Secret Service and the President's Office is covering up the greatest breach in Secret Service protection since Ronald Reagan was shot by that lunatic. And I think that we need to talk about it until these people are retired and sent to a school somewhere in Idaho to teach gym. I think everybody on the president's detail, I mean, you know, this is ridiculous. You know, it doesn't matter whether you're a Democrat, Republican. We cannot afford to have a president hurt. And with these doofuses, either unable or unwilling to act proactively, we are in real trouble. And I got news for you. The big winner here is Al-Qaeda. So if you want to talk about a Shoegate, Madoff Gate, or if you are a victim of Madoff, the Savage Nation is now a hotline for Madoff victims. Tell your story here. 1-800-449-8255. Again, I want to repeat that. If you're a victim of Madoff, or you know someone is a victim of Madoff, and you really want to tell the story of how it was done, how much was lost, and where you're at today, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. This show today, in part, is a hotline for Madoff victims. I'll be right back.
Savage.
There's always this friction that goes on between the regulating side, the regulation side of the industry, and the practitioners that say, okay, you know, where do you draw the line? You know, regulators would always, you know, and I look, I'm very close with the regulators, so I'm not trying to say that they can't, you know, that what they do is bad. As a matter of fact, my niece just married one.
He was boasting. The guy was boasting. He was like an evil fox. I'm getting emails, you can't believe it, from people, none of whom lost any money with him because we'd have no money in the stock market. Nobody in my circle, from rich to poor, has a nickel in the market. We knew that it was a casino, and we didn't know the owner. We knew it was rigged against people, so we had no money in the market. Now, it is true that during the hot years, everyone probably said, gee, I wish I knew someone who could get me into a hedge fund. They're making so much money. Why can't I get in? Well, now you know the answer. God was watching over you if you didn't get into one of these crooked schemes. I want to know why he's still on the street. That's what I'd like to know. Oh, yeah, I know. Innocent until proven guilty. Fine. What a system. He'll be innocent until you drop dead, because he'll hire enough shyster lawyers who own the judges in New York all the way to Washington. He'll never spend a day in jail, you idiots, you. The Savage Nation today is a hotline for Madoff victims. If you want to tell your story, 1-800-449-8255. If you want to see who I'm talking about, you got to see the picture of this villain on michaelsavage.com. It's the best picture yet of him in a limousine that was put up in the New York Post today. It's unbelievable. I mean, this picture will live in infamy. Seymour in New York, sorry to hear it. Apparently you lost a lot of money with this crook.
I lost all my money, all my mother's money. It's not a joke. I'm very, very depressed from Friday. I haven't slept.
Okay, I'm not, you know, this is not a joking matter. We're talking about all your money? I mean, nothing?
$1.2 million.
And you have nothing left?
There's nothing left. We have no more money. My brothers want to kill me, Michael.
I don't understand what you mean. How did your mother's money wind up in this thief's hands?
She met him at the Plaza Atenea in the 60s, in 1982. And he conned her for the money. And my mother said, let's sell the house and give him the money. And
oh, my God. See, I heard other people have actually mortgaged their houses to give him the money to make more money.
I don't know, but right now I'm broke, Michael, and I don't know what to do. I'm broke.
What do you mean? I don't understand what you mean. You don't have any income either? You said it was your mother's money, Seymour.
My mother's money, and I was living with my mother, and there's no more money. And I don't know.
You're a man in your 60s, Seymour?
I'm 58.
Oh, my God. So what, do you have only Social Security?
I had an IRA account. That's gone also.
Well, what are you going to do? I'd like to know. Seymour, I'm not here to make a joke out of it or pick your bones. You're telling me you have nothing?
Michael, I don't know what to do anymore. This man conned the world. He's a con artist. He's a thief. He's a liar. I don't know anymore.
He is the most evil of evil, Seymour. He preyed upon his own people. And you say, well, why is that worse than preying upon strangers? Because he took advantage of the ethnic connection, Seymour. He abused it.
I don't know, Michael. I haven't slept since Friday. I can't do it anymore. There's no more money. It's finished.
Well, I'm sorry, Seymour. I don't know what to say either. I really don't know what to do. I mean, I don't have the capacity to raise money for people who are destitute. You know, I wish to God I could help people. I'm one man. I can't help everybody. I don't know what they would. What would you do? What would I do if I woke up one day and I didn't have a house? You know, it's funny. You ask yourself, could it happen to you? Sure, it could happen to you. It just happened to your neighbor. You say, well, it can't happen to me because I was never a millionaire. A lot of these people were not millionaires either. We had a guy called yesterday who was a graduate student. He lost $65,000. I want to know where the money is. I want to know why the sons are playing dumb. What do you mean? He said to the federal investigators, my sons didn't know anything. I don't buy it for one second. And I want to know why this man is out on bail in a limousine. Well, that's our system for you. Remember Gotti was out on bail and he beat every case until the end. They got him on tape. I'd like to know what kind of system we have when a man admits to an FBI agent he's a crook and he can still drive away. But I'd like to know where the money is. Where did the money go? Let's say it wasn't $50 billion. Let's say he was exaggerating because he was also an egomaniac. And by the way, that's going to be one of his defense lines of defense. He's going to get a shyster lawyer out of the worst scum of Harvard. The lowest of the low scum who graduated either Harvard Law or Yale Law. One of the lowest law schools in America. You know, and I say that not because I'm an uneducated man. I have a first-rate PhD from the University of California at Berkeley. But I've never met such losers as those who went to Harvard. Everyone I ever met who went to Harvard is the worst jerk I ever met in my life. They either live on their wife's money or their family money, and they never were able to make a nickel in their own life. But let's put that aside. They're going to get one of those low-life scum lawyers from Harvard who are going to claim that he had Alzheimer's disease or his medication did it, that he was delusional and his medication did it, and it's really a product of tragedy for all, and unfortunately Mr. Madoff didn't mean it. He really required medication. They gave him the wrong medication, so we're bringing a lawsuit against Bud Abbott and Lou Costello Laboratories. But he himself is absolutely innocent. He didn't mean it. In fact, he's trying to make restitution right now. He took his granddaughter's gold shoe from the mirror of his first car, which is in his living room, and he's going to melt it down and give it out to fillings of the teeth.
Savage.
Woe unto them that decree unrighteous decrees, and to the writers that write iniquity, to turn aside the needy from judgment, and to take away the right of the poor of my people, that widows may be their spoil, and that they may make the fatherless their prey. So if you think that Madoff was born yesterday, you are mistaken. Evil like this has existed since Eve bit into the apple. Okay? This man is just the classic villain. And I think we've only seen the beginning of the Trail of Tears. You understand that? The question is, how does evil get away with it? The answer is because the system is evil. The system is rigged to defend the evil, not to prosecute the evil. Everything about the system is against the police. Everything about the system is against the righteous. Everything about the system is in favor of the crook and the wrongdoer. Do you understand that? Do you get it? It's only a matter of time until they take you down for something you didn't do. That's how I see it. We all live like this. We all feel like we're living in a police state that any day the innocent could be called guilty and the guilty will be called innocent because the guilty run the courts. You think there's justice in a New York court? How many oxymorons can I put in one show? Justice in a New York court? A New York judge? Are you kidding me? I'll stop right here. I left New York a long time ago, not because everybody in New York was evil. It's just that I knew the system was rigged against an honest man. I knew that. I knew I could never get to the first base if I stayed there. I knew the system was rigged. It was set up a certain way. And either I wanted to stay in civil service job, and that would have been it for the rest of my life, or I wanted to take a chance and follow my own road. Now, let me tell you, it's been a rocky road. It's been a rocky road. At this point, things are good. That doesn't mean tomorrow I know what's coming. Nobody knows what tomorrow is going to bring. I understand all of that. But the fact of the matter is I did it my way. And I had to get out of that hellhole in order to get where I am today. I never could have gotten Never mind to first base. I couldn't have gotten out of home plate. I would have been hit by a fastball and knocked out if I had stayed in New York, because everybody there that I met was throwing curveballs and stabbing you in the back. So you have to understand what happened here is not so unusual. It's just on a scale that has not been seen since, Ponzi, you know? Why is he in a limousine going out to the Hamptons or wherever? Why is he still there? Why is his apartment not sealed with yellow tape? Can't the government embarrass him in some way? Bring shame to that family? They can still walk around and go to Zabor's and buy a pastrami and no one spits in their face? New York, Harold, you're on the Savage Nation.
Michael, thanks for taking my call. Here's the story, okay? You and I have actually spoken a few times before. I always did comedy with you. Can't do comedy tonight. It's too serious. Doesn't involve me personally. It's a friend of mine, younger than me, someone I've known a long, long time. He comes into my store today, small store, kind of like what your father had. Small store, comes into my store. We're talking. It was his mother. His mother was bilked out of $2 million, who I know. I know her personally. The mother got the money when her husband passed away. He left $2 million, this man, and he was a powerful man in his own right. He left $2 million. This man was involved with the Mets, with Wilpon, and Wilpon went down too. So my buddy comes in today and he tells me this story. The mother lost $2 million. His sister went in with this guy also, lost another $1 million. The mother is wiped out, doesn't have a thing.
But where is the money? Harold, where is the money?
Where is the money? I don't know where is the money. How do you spend $50 billion? The guy could have bought a small country in the Caribbean with this kind of money.
Well, let's start at the top. SEC official married into Madoff family. Have you heard that story yet today?
Sure, I did. Sure.
Uh-huh. Now, what does that tell you? That the SEC, a compliance official who worked for the SEC, and he found no problems at Madoff's firm in 2005. He later began to date and married Madoff's niece, who was a compliance lawyer for his own company. It's right out of The Godfather.
You know, you're right. It's interesting. I was thinking about that parallel, too, because I grew up with them back in the 70s with all the wise guys back in Rosedale. And,
okay, now let's go a step further. You know the movie The Departed with Leonardo DiCaprio and all the great actors? You saw it recently with Matt Damon?
Of course, yes.
Okay, remember the Jack Nicholson character, the Irish gangster, picks a kid out of the neighborhood and puts him through the police academy so he'd have a plant inside the Rhode Island State Police. Remember that character?
Yes, yes, yes.
All right, so this guy Madoff was actually telling everybody and saying, I even have a regulator in the family, and laughing about it. But he did it so openly that nobody believed him, that he would be corrupt.
He used his ethnicity to his advantage. It was just
Let's not avoid the Jewish element here. It's been written about. Did you hear my guest yesterday, Lawrence Lehmer?
Yes, yes, yes.
Oh my God! You talk about one word was operational about the Palm Beach crowd. This probably doesn't apply to your friend's mother because she wasn't in that category. $2 million wouldn't have bought her a seat at the table. We're talking about total pretentiousness from the top to the bottom. And so, you know, there's a lot. Here's the thing, Harold. There's a lot of people saying they got what they deserved. You know that that's what's going on because most people don't have $2 million, Harold.
Yes, yes, yes. What I
so there's that going on. There's a lot of envy and jealousy and people saying, well, you know what? I didn't have $2 million to be suckered with. Who cares? You know, well, where did he get the money from? Her husband?
Her husband, he was big in business. He was a publisher. He worked hard his whole life. He can't.
All right, so he wasn't the crook. He made his money honestly. He earned his own money. And then the wife, he died. The wife got it. She was taken in by this crook, and now she has nothing.
This is absolutely.
All right, Nick, thanks for the call. 1-800-449-8255. We're also talking about Shoegate on the Savage Nation, the embarrassment to the Secret Service, which is really a big deal. And I have to keep repeating it, and I'm not looking to make more of it than it is. But to me, as we talked about yesterday, one of those agents should have jumped up like a football player and interfered. I caught it like a pass before it hit the president. Certainly the second shoe, okay? And secondly, they're trained to watch movements of people, I understand. When a man reaches down for his shoe, they should have pounced on him before the shoe came off. That's another failure. That agent also should be sent to Bolivia to work in a field picking coca leaves. 1-800-449-8255. Mississippi Glenn, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael, great show, but surely early in the program you weren't advocating that the president's detail should be reprimanded or even fired. I mean, it was a pair of shoes, for goodness sake.
No, I am. I'm suggesting they should all be fired. Every one of them failed him.
Oh, come on. The guy could have taken off his wristwatch and thrown that, or his pen, or his notepad.
Glenn, did you watch the tape of the shoes?
Excuse me?
Have you seen the tape of the shoes flying at the president?
Yes, I have, multiple times.
Okay. Let's review it mentally together. That first shoe misses President Bush's right eye by centimeters. Then there's a second shoe. Where was a Secret Service agent throwing himself between the president and the threat?
It was a pair of shoes, Michael. The room had already been swept for any weapons of any kind.
But again, you're missing the point. There was no proactive action on the part of the Secret Service agents. Their job is to put themselves between the threat and the president. They didn't do that. They stood there like dummies.
I had a
man call yesterday who said he trains. He's a martial artist. He claimed he trains FBI and Secret Service agents. He said he's shocked at the lack of proactivity amongst the new generation of recruits. He said they stand there like idiots. They take no action. It seems like it's the country itself, Glenn. They need to consult a rule book before they do anything.
Will you at least give his press secretary, Dana Perina, a brownie point? She took a black eye for him. Did you see that?
I know that. How did she get hit in the eye with a mic stand?
Yeah, with a microphone that hit her in the eye. Okay, Mike, thanks.
Thank you. I still think these guys failed him completely. That's all. 1-800-449-8255. You know, it's a terrible thing to be in this business in a way, because no matter what you say, you make enemies. You understand that? You know, I'm not making any friends by saying some of the things that I'm saying today or I say every day. Some people who liked me yesterday hate me today. Some people who hated me yesterday, like me today. It's the nature of the business. If you speak out, you're going to make friends and enemies. And that's the nature of the business. You have to take chances. Otherwise, you shouldn't be in this business. So forgive me if I offend you in any way today, but, forgive me in advance. That's all. Obama. I believe we are seeing the tip of the iceberg of the dictator. A reporter today asks Barack Hussein Obama about the Blagojevich scandal. And Obama cuts him off and says, I don't want you to waste your question. Do you have that particular soundbite? That's the one I want. No, other one.
McCormick. Thank you, Mr. President-elect. First of all, given the situation here in Illinois, do you favor or oppose a special election to fill your vacant seat? And secondly, you told us at your first press conference after the election that you were going to take a very hands-off approach to filling that spot. Over the weekend, the Tribune reported that Rahm Emanuel, your incoming chief of staff, had presented a list of potential names.
John, let me just cut you off, because I don't want you to waste your question.
Did you hear the doublespeak? Have you ever heard anything as wild as what he just said? He didn't waste his question, Obama. He asked the question. You wasted the opportunity to show that you're an honest, open man. You've already exhibited that you're a dictator. You don't want him to waste his question? He asked you the question. You wasted his question by not answering it. Now, the question is the media going to do what they are supposed to do? You know the answer? No. Because they're a bunch of lapdogs. This guy should be given an award. The reporter. John McCormick should get an award for having the guts to ask a question. You know, 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. I got a half a migraine already. It's early in the day. When is Christmas? When are the holidays? I'm not going anywhere. I'll be here through the holidays for you because, as you know, there's nowhere to go. I went on a vacation last week. I couldn't wait to get back. There's going to be a lot less vacations now, you know. I'm not a sun type of guy. I like the cold. I don't know, maybe the latitude is wrong. That's my own problem. It's not yours. Kansas City, Nick, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Mike. I work with a union man out of New York, and his local out of New York, they invested the pension and the annuities of almost 1,000 men with Bernie, and all those accounts were.
Oh, my God. He wiped out 1,000 union pensions?
Pensions and their annuities.
Well, The only thing that comes to my mind when I hear union members and I hear blue collar, you know what's coming? I have to phrase this in a way that doesn't come back on to me. Who was the famous UAW, the Teamsters official who disappeared?
Probably Hoffa, right?
Yeah, Hoffa. The word Hoffa came to mind. I thought oil barrel somehow. How could he get away with this? Doesn't he think there's going to be any ramifications on this?
I guess not. And what the guy was saying today is that for 5 years, you know, he'll put more money back into these accounts, but they'll show for nothing in the long run. And now instead of 55, he'll retire. It's been, you know, kicked back to at least 60. So huge impact.
So he took 5 years out of a man's life times 1,000. He took 1,000 men and make them work an extra 5 years. So he took 5,000 years of men's lives. Where did the money go, Nick? That's what I want to know. How much money can a pig want? How much money can a greedy prostitute want? What did he do with this money? Where did it go?
You know, I don't know. And I think it might be more about his ability to do that as opposed to maybe the amount of money.
You mean he was a psychopath who enjoyed robbing people and getting away with it? And that gave him his pleasure?
You know, I don't think you can spend $50 billion if you tried. So the only next option.
But
I see is
the regulators, I have already read that the regulators cannot account for $30 billion of it. They don't even know where $30 billion of it is. That's why when I hear the Suns didn't know anything about it, I don't believe that. Do you?
No, that's BS.
How could you work in a building with your father? Oh, it's another floor. You didn't know what he was doing up there. And you went downstairs for a pretzel. You didn't talk about it. How he ripped off a union down there in Alabama? And laughed about it on the way to the toilet. Please, I could throw up from these people. You know, and that's why I want to go back again to the phraseology, to my poem from the 2000. Lexus liberals, the lunchroom Lenins, the stand-up Stalins, the pathetic Pol Pot Marxists. These are good phrases. You have to understand them to understand how good they are. The land of suntan, Trotsky's and delis. That's Palm Beach. That's Boynton Beach. That's Boca Raton, suntan, Trotsky's and delis. They all had $1 million in Bernie's hands, but they were espousing Trotskyite rhetoric. Half of them had bypasses, but they were bypassed Bolsheviks and Buicks. They were air-conditioned chais and condos. You have to get the shtick to understand how good this is. All right, it's for 12 people in a nightclub. I'll be right back. You don't know what to believe in. At a certain point in your life, you know, you can put everything aside. You think you say the Rock of Ages or the Bible. I mean, at a certain point, you become so cynical, you don't know what to believe in. And what does that leave you? Where do you end up? My mother used to say to me, so I don't know. She said, everyone has to believe in something. And she's right. At the end of the day, when you lose everything, whether it's money or you lose your sight or you lose your family, God forbid, or you lose your health, where do you turn? What are you going to turn to at that point? You think it's a joke? Everyone goes to, at some point in your life, you're going to reach that, whether you've, you know, skated so far, it's only a matter of time. You know, you wake up one day and your health is gone. It was here today and gone tomorrow. Then what do? Who do you turn to? Who do you turn to? So in a way, America is having its reckoning right now. The financial meltdown that we are seeing is a period of reckoning for a system that has lived with excess for so long, built upon a house of cards. It's built on fraud. The Social Security system, built by FDR, is a Ponzi scheme. In order for it to sustain itself and to keep giving out benefits to those who came in earlier, you need new blood coming and pumping in their hard-earned money so the government can rip you off and pay it to them. The money isn't there. We all know that. Well, how does a welfare state exist? Where's the money coming from? It's coming from we, the taxpayer, the hardworking people. I'm paying 50, 60% of my income in various taxations. Where is it supposed to come from? If I say, go to, you know where, all of you, I'm not working anymore. You can take a broomstick and fly on it if you think I'm going to pay Arnold Schwarzenegger to support the illegal aliens' gold-plated healthcare system. I wouldn't give them a penicillin tablet for nothing. They don't deserve it. They're not citizens. They're not paying taxes. You hear all these frauds? This cream puff from Austria says the state's bankrupt. First it was $25 million, now it's $41 billion. You think they really know? these sons of you-know-what, these SOBs, these... They're all Madoffs. The governors are all Madoffs. The whole political system is made up of guys like Madoff. You know, he's a symptom of it all, and he's a symbol of it all. But the governors are the same as him. The presidents are the same as him. How are they providing money for welfare recipients other than to take it from people who earn it? What is that? That's not fraud? What do you think, taxation at a certain level is not the same thing as defrauding you? Where's the money going? So you say, I say put a state trooper in every hospital in every state that's flooded with illegal aliens and say, we want to see a bona fide citizenship paper or you're not getting treatment. I'm sorry, we can't afford to give you an aspirin tablet because the thieving doctors and the HMOs charge us $38 for an aspirin tablet. Get out of here. Or put it nicely, I don't care, in Spanish. You know, lavo los manos in Mexico, whatever, man. They're nice people. I was just in Mexico. They're the nicest people on earth. I happen to like Mexican people. I'm not saying it just so you think I'm a nice guy. I like Mexican people. I get along with them. I've never really met anyone I didn't get along. I do. I like the people. They're an easy guy. They're nice people. They're family-oriented. I enjoy the people down there more than the sun. I didn't like the sun. It's not about Mexico or Mexicans or the sun. It's about the fact that we are broke as a nation. We can't have any freeloaders in the country, particularly foreigners. So you say the governor says we're broke, but why doesn't he do something about it? Start with the hospitals. Start with the schools. No medical care, no education for the illegal alien. Do it in every state of the union, and you'll suddenly see a belt tightening. How come you don't hear it? The answer is quite simple. If you go to michaelsavage.com, I found an astonishing article today, and it takes me a second to get to it. And I have to look for it because I didn't plan on this particular section at this time. It was about illegal aliens being funneled into Chicago. Here it is. It was from WorldNet Daily. Emmanuel, Rahm Emanuel, the tight-lipped, sharp-elbowed chief of staff to Barack Hussein Obama, BHO, fast-tracked illegal immigrants to get votes. He relaxed rules to naturalize even criminal immigrants to secure their votes, charges a former INS official. There's your Chicago.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Cinema, the Davy Jones of rum and gold and wenches bold. You had your last fill, Billy Bones. Good morning to you, Billy Bones.
Good morning to you, Billy Bones.
Billy Bones, Billy Bones.
Good morning to you, Charming Billy.
That chest that you're laying on a sail to see you with you and I and Flint agreed to divvy the contents up into three golden jewels, Billy Bones, Billy Bones.
Bones,
bones, bones, Billy Bones, send them off to Davy Jones of rum and gold and wenches old. Had your last fill, Billy Bones. This is Michael Savage. With a dark sense of humor, as the times get darker and the show goes on rolling along, you'll hear me getting more and more humorous for myself, because if you think we are in the darkest of times, my friend, you are a real American. We are in the beginning of it. You live in Disneyland. You grew up probably coloring in Mickey and Donald. That's why Americans walk around like goofballs smiling at everybody. Why do you smile at strangers? Where'd that come from? That is the most unnatural thing to do is war. Those pleasant faces get me angry. I actually have a reaction to them. Now, it's a cultural thing. I like people who scowl. I trust them more. I trust more of the Eastern European look at life. Men don't walk around like a fool. In fact, if a man smiles at an Eastern European like a Russian, he'll say, "I'm not abroad. Why are you smiling at me? Get that smile off your face." I've heard that said. See, I come from another world. Excuse me. And so you'll have to forgive me for my reactions because they're not altogether predictable. And so we're talking about the scandal on Wall Street. But to me, it's horrible, sure. But how does he differ than the governor of California or the governor of New York or the governor of Illinois? Tell me how Madoff differs. They're all scam artists, in my opinion. What, because one took someone's investments and disappeared them? Well, you could say that if a governor takes your tax dollars and disappears them and the state is still broke, he's the same as Madoff. It's also a Ponzi scheme. So to me, it's all one and the same. I was singing, incidentally, from Billy Bones and Other Ditties by Skip Henderson. I don't know Mr. Henderson. I bought a little boat this summer, an inexpensive 20-foot runabout. I'd been at a boat show, and it had flags on it. I don't know. It was, you know how you buy impulse buying? My poor other boat sits there. I rarely go out in it. It's like you buy the little boat, and I don't even want the bigger boat. I love going out. Anyway, so I was at the boat show. This song was playing on it. There was a smart salesman. He had a tape playing with sea ditties on it. I love the music so much, I got caught up in the moment. I bought the boat. They delivered it 2 days later. It was around the colonoscopy time. It was to have me forget what the guy put the pipe in me that looked like. I couldn't believe it on the table there. I thought that the colonoscope would be the size of, let's say, a darning needle. Just before they knocked me out, I'm laying, I took a look. She's around 3 feet long, and I said to the girl, I said, "What's that?" She says, "That's the colonoscope." I said, "You're going to put that in me?" She says, "Yeah, well." The doctor had his back to me. He was working against the wall, and the nurse was over there, and this was the assistant. So I have a dark sense of humor. So I saw, looked like a salami she was about to put in me. I said, "Has anyone ever died from this?" Well, the doctor turned around. The nurse turned around. I said, "No, I mean from pleasure." Whereupon the other doctor said, "You're on the wrong side of San Francisco for that, buddy." So you have to have a sense of humor wherever you are. What are you going to do? My mother was the same way, rest her soul, right to the end. She was the type in the hospital that told jokes while she was in for surgery. People sat around the bed. And, you know, my father, I shouldn't tell this story. I hope my wife's not listening. But he was a straight-laced, one of the best, World War II vet. I don't ever told his story. This guy was a great man, Indiana farm boy, captain of his football team. Went to Harvard Law, honest as the day was good. He was a Midwesterner. He wasn't from Brooklyn, okay? Honest as the day was long. An honest lawyer in New York, if you could believe it. So he goes into World War II as a naval gunnery officer. He comes out mum, becomes mum. Why? The things he saw, men blown up around them, body parts flying. It was typical of World War II guys. They didn't come home crying. They didn't need closure. They didn't need closure with the crying to everybody, with sob sister stories. They just ate it, and they never wanted to talk about it. So the long and short of it is late in his life, God, he gets cancer. And he goes to a hospital in New York at that time. He was living in New York. And there's a kibitzer in the cancer ward, from the same milieu of Bernie Madoff. Total different ethnicity than my father-in-law. But he loved them. He loved the guy's stories. I mean, you're talking about the cancer ward jokesters. There are guys in a cancer ward that can make you laugh. And you know what? God bless them. That's all I can say. And that's what I'm saying to you. You know, you got to remember that what we're suffering now is nothing compared to what countries have lived through or what you're going to live through, in my opinion, with the thieves running everything. So as I say to you, when I play these sea ditties like this, the Billy Bones, I don't know why it struck a chord with me. I find it funny. So you read the program notes. It says, in the creation and release of this album, no effort is made to be profound. It is mostly a collection of snippets and common sailors' tunes, some well-known and some obscure, that have been kicking around the San Francisco Bay waterfront scene for decades. I loved it. I loved it because although I wasn't born here, I'm as much a part of this bay, if not more so, than most of the people who were born here. I know high governmental officials who have never been on a boat in San Francisco Bay. So don't tell me that they're natives. I love the word native. I'm a native San Franciscan. No, you're not a native. A Miwok is a native. You know, your grandfather was probably a gold miner, and your grandmother was probably a prostitute. If you read Mark Twain, I love the natives, native sons, and they're all natives. You know, natives. Get out the wampum, you're a native. Don't tell me you're a native. It means nothing. That and a dollar will get you on the Muni bus, native. So you look at these songs. I love some of them. I love the tarpaulin jacket. Do you have tarpaulin jacket? Wrap me up in my tarpaulin. Can you, in my burial shroud. I love that one. Why do I like these songs?
A handsome young seaman lay dying, and as on the foredeck he lay, to around him his comrades come sighing. These last mournful words he did say. Wrap me up,
in my tarpaulin jacket.
And say a poor duffer's lay low.
It's very touching. I can't explain it. They were rough people. Seamen are rough people. They live with death. Anyway, turn it off already. I'm going around. They don't know what I'm talking about. It's for me. It's my own emotions. That's all. I deal with things in my own way. I sort, and it comes out weird. Because what am I going to do when you see a crook like this, a crooked SOB? I personally would like to put my hands around him and squeeze sense into him. But I'm not that kind of man. I'm a quiet man. I'm a quiet, bookwormish talk show host. You see a crook like this, what he did to families. And he reminds me of so many people I met in my life. That's really why this story is touching me so deeply. This is the kind of scum, this Madoff, in my opinion. This is the kind of low-life, filthy scum that all of my life made my life a living hell. This is the kind of vermin that sat on the boards that wouldn't let me through the door. This is the kind of human offal. This is the kind of latrine slime that wouldn't let me in the door of his country club. This is the kind of filth that wouldn't let me into his co-op. This is the kind that looked down upon me. I wasn't good enough for him. All I can tell you is that in many ways, the story of Madoff has almost justified my entire existence. I am glad I left New York when I did. I'm glad I left people like him behind me, and I've shunned them all of my life. I've met them, and truthfully, I've had nothing to do with them. They all gave me the willies. Oh, many of them had perfect teeth and the gold-rimmed glasses and the big houses. That was nothing to me. I'm not a poor man. I don't need their houses. Trust me, I don't need their money. I need nothing from any of them. But you know what? I did it my way, and every dollar I earned myself honestly. And that's something that I can take to my grave with me. My father was the same way. My father was a poor, well, it wasn't, he started out with a pushcart. He had a little shop in a market. And yeah, I'm going to tell you the story. I don't care whether you like it or not. But he told me one thing. He told me that honesty was the best policy. Never, ever took a nickel from anybody. If someone didn't like what they bought, he let them return it and he gave them their money back without any questions. Didn't die a rich man, but he left a teeny little attached house and enough money for my mother to live on the rest of her life without investments. Although what she did have was robbed by someone within the family as well, by the way. If you think Madoff and this ethnicity is alone, you're wrong. It comes in all families and all stripes. He invested it for her, and he took every penny and gambled it away, that rat. He should get cancer of every cell of his body, but we won't go into that. The point I'm making is, the most important thing that you have is your self-respect and your honor. Nothing else matters. Do you understand that? And we've lived through a time in America where grandiosity and pomposity and excess became the norm. And you could blame the media for it, by the way. You don't have to blame yourself. Human emotions are such that they can be exploited very easily. We're all children inside. So when you open up a newspaper run by the lowest scum on the planet, a pirate who would release cholera into a blanket is nothing compared to the people who own the media. Nothing. The people who released smallpox in the blankets of the Cherokee Indians was a piker compared to the people who release this toxic pornography into your mind and the minds of your children. The people who run the newspapers, the people who run the movies, the people who run the media are the worst scum the planet has ever seen. They're the ones who have flared you up thinking that if you didn't own a 75,000 square foot mansion in Palm Beach, you were worthless. You understand that? That the woman that you lived with all of your life wasn't good enough for you because they ditched their wives and married some prostitute with liposuction, and suddenly that became the norm. Or they picked the vermin from the gutters of Hollywood. The vermin every day in and out of rehab, and they hold them up as role models for your little girl. So as I say to you, the U.S. military officer who decided to put smallpox inside the blankets and give those blankets, those toxic blankets, to the poor, starving Cherokee Indians who've been thrown off their land and sent out on a march in which most of them died, was a nice man compared to the people who run the media in America because of the toxicity that they put into their newspapers, their movies about how you should live as a drug addict, as a prostitute, as a degenerate of the lowest order. They hold him up as role models. This is the end, by the way, the end game of the anti-hero being glorified by the vermin of the 1960s. I'll talk more about it at another time right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
15 men on a dead man's chest, yo-ho-ho and a bottle of rum. Drink and the devil have done for the rest, yo-ho-ho and a bottle of rum.
Rum.
Bottle
of rum.
The mate was fixed by the bosun's pike.
Bosun brain with a marlin spike. Cookie's throat was marked like it had been gripped by fingers ten. And there they lay, all good dead men. Like break a day in a boozing can. Yo-ho-ho and a bottle of rum. All right, you get it. Turn it on. And we got a Navy now. They have to consult a manual before they can fire a BB gun at an incoming raft. You hear? From the age of the leatherneck to the age of the pinafore. Then fired a shot. Now, the Russian Navy is in off the coast there, and they interviewed the great Condoleezza Rice, the piano player. Russian warships have been plying the waters of Venezuela and Panama in recent weeks, you hear? And heading to Cuba. But U.S. officials, so-called officials, U.S. officials, I guess the same officials who were looking at the Wall Street thieves. Well, the same people are in the State Department and the Defense Department. Asked about a Russian warship transiting the Panama Canal earlier this month, Secretary of State moron Condoleezza Rice Zeroni, who saw the ship while crossing the canal last week, told the AP, I guess they're on R&R, it's fine. The Pentagon, while puzzled by the Russians' actions, also said nothing. The head of the Navy in the area said they pose no military threat to the U.S. It's fine. Rice shrugs it off. She said, I don't know why one would care about it. I'm not particularly going to lose any sleep over that. No, you never lost any sleep over anything, you dimwit, you. Go back to Stanford where you belong, you idiot. So we go from the leatherneck to the petticoat, and here's what we have. You hear this? U.S. Navy founded upon murder and mayhem to protect commercial ships, and now it's run like basically a welfare state, a welfare reform bureau with propellers. Russian warships to South America. New York, Sean, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, Michael, I think this is absolute ridiculous that this media, no one is covered. First, we got St. Petersburg already in Venezuela, which is a nuclear warship. Now we got three more ships coming, and nothing from the media. They were so worried about the inauguration. This is like the Cuban Missile Crisis to me. Well, who's running this place?
It would be like the Cuban Missile Crisis if they were carrying nuclear weapons and delivering them to the island of Cuba. We don't know if they are, do we?
I mean, I'm reading two of them, the Associated Press, that the Pentagon is saying no big deal. These are the same people that the big catch of the century is.
Yeah, these are the same people who told us that everything was good on Wall Street last spring.
This is the same Congress people.
We have a total meltdown in all institutions of government. In essence, the central government has abdicated responsibility. They're not running this country. They've abdicated all their responsibility from the top to the bottom. If they're not outright corrupt, then they're outright moronic. Thanks for the call. I got a headache. I can't even talk about it. New York City, WOR, Pat, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, I'm calling about Madoff. The people that have been calling up saying that they were wiped out, the 70, 80-year-old people, I want to know what they were doing putting all their money in a hedge fund when they're in retirement. How does someone put money in a fund that he can't afford to lose? And the people that have...
Well, it's an interesting question because the first rule of investment that I learned in the 60s when I had next to nothing was don't invest. The brokers used to tell you this when they were honest brokers around. They would say don't put in more into stocks than you can afford to lose. I was told that all through the 60s. Do you know that?
Mm-hmm.
So what you're saying is these people gambled everything and lost. So what are you going to do? It's like going to the casino, right?
That's the whole thing. They were just greedy, and I don't feel sorry for them. The only one I'm not too sure of is the guy who called up with the pension.
Oh, well, there's another story. They didn't invest. Their pension funds were invested through third, fourth parties. They had nothing to do with it. So there are many innocent, or what you say, passive investors who you should have sympathy for. I mean, I still have a little sympathy for those who invested only because of their gullibility. They were taken in by this crook. Rather than saying you don't feel anything for the people who lost, we should reserve all of our hatred for the Madoff group. Don't think he did this alone, in my opinion. They're all crooked.
Savage.
You may have heard I've had a pretty eventful weekend. So I slipped out Saturday night to Andrews Air Force Base, boarded Air Force One, and landed in Baghdad, Iraq.
Wow.
On Sunday afternoon. It was an unbelievable experience. It really was to stand next to the president of a democracy and hold my hand over my heart as they played the national anthem in front of one of Saddam Hussein's palaces.
Well, oh, great. I'm glad you enjoyed it. Tell that to the people who lost their sons or people laying here without eyes and ears and legs. And wonderful. I'm glad you had a good, nice time. Glad you were moved by it. We have a stooge there named Malarkey. Great. And they have a surplus, and they don't pay us a dime for liberating them. What a deal. Isn't that a great deal? You break a country, you liberate the people, then you rebuild the country. It costs the taxpayers $1 trillion. Then the country's rolling in oil revenue, and you don't get a nickel back. What a deal. No wonder they played the national anthem and threw a shoe. Okay, so here are some of the stories on MichaelSavage.com. SEC official married into Madoff family. You hear? Gulfstream liberals, it's from Psychological Nudity 2000 it was written. Lexus liberals with Volkswagens on their brains. Condo commies, lunchroom Lenins, it's from the book. And by the way, all through this week, I'm paying the extra shipping costs. You can still get it to somebody, a loved one, by Christmas. I'll pay the extra shipping. It contains the 75 of my stories. It's a great gift. Tippy dies and is thrown in a garbage truck. Very nice for the holidays to read to the children about a dog that has died, dies and thrown in a garbage truck. No, it doesn't go to heaven. There is no heaven for a dog. No. It's thrown in a garbage truck in my day. Today it's boo-hoo with crypts and more than for a person. People cremate themselves and they bury a dog. Go figure out an insane society like this. Themselves, what are you going to do with you? Cremate me. Nothing. I don't care. There's no life after life. But your dog, you go cry about in Sonoma in a mausoleum they built for him. It's an upside-down insane society. I tell you, this is a top to the bottom. Harry the Undertaker and Sydney dying of cancer, page 99. Let me see this one. A paragraph. Life has been good to me. I've had my share, as Harry the Undertaker once said to me. Did I ever tell you about Harry the Undertaker? I hope his family's not listening. I told you about Sydney, didn't I? Sydney, the old man who was dying of cancer years later. I'll tell you about him, then Harry the Undertaker. As he was dying in severe pain, the girls would go by in the market. He was moaning. He was moaning, but he still wore a neat little suit, tie, jacket, and the slits that were his eyes would light up when he saw a pretty girl walk by. Now, mind you, he was dying, and he was racked with pain, and he was dying of cancer. But as the girls walked by, he'd say, Oh, Mickey, a pretty girl would walk by, and he'd say, I'd like to make love to her once more, as the woman walked by. And I said, I was a little kid. I said, you made love to her, this strange, beautiful woman? He said, no, Mickey, once more I'd like to make love to her. He turned the words around. I thought it was funny. I know those are not the exact words, but this is a family show. He put it another way to me. The point of the story is that although he was a poor man and he had a little broken-down stall in the market, he considered himself a ladies' man anyway. He wore cologne. He wore a suit. And that reminds me of another older gentleman, Harry the Undertaker, a dapper little fellow who chauffeured the funeral cars lived next door. Years after my conversation with Sydney, when I was 14, I asked Harry about women. I said, do you monkey around or something like that? And he said, no, Mickey, I had my share. Now, that was dignified that a man would say I had my share. It was an amazing thing for me to hear because most guys pretend that they're in heat 24/7 till they die at 85. They're ready to rut like a rooster in a barnyard, and every woman is fair game. Everyone who walks by, they're ready for. You know, guys, every guy has to put on that act. Well, with Viagra today, you understand that. But in reality, most men aren't like that. It's very unnatural to be in heat 24/7, but this guy was dignified, the Undertaker. He said, no, Mickey, I had my share. That was the most dignified thing a man ever said to me, page 100 of Psychological Nudity. These were men from another time, another world. But I remember when I first went to college now, I'm going to tie it into something else. I walked into Psych 101. I came from a blue-collar family. No one had ever gone to college, meaning my mother or father. They were high school educated at most. And so I go into it. I take Psych 101. I think I'm already Sigmund Freud. I'll never forget this day. I come in the big lecture hall. I thought I was a genius just by walking into the lecture hall because now I'm in college. And the professor was a blonde woman, a very attractive blonde woman with eyeglasses. And she was lecturing us on pregnancy. And, you know, you don't know what she's talking about. You're a kid. I was 16 years old when I entered college. And it was Psych 101. And she starts talking. Well, she says, she was just rambling on. And in all words, she says, you guys don't know what it's like to be pregnant. You could never know what it's like to be pregnant because you're a man. You have no idea. But she said, try to imagine passing a grapefruit through your rear end, and you'll have some idea what it's like to deliver a baby. Well, everyone, the guys are like, wow, what a thought. I mean, this was before San Francisco, where it became a sport, you know. But we had no, I mean, that she was trying to explain to us the pain a woman goes through, the travails of labor. And she was the first feminist professor that I encountered, not the last by any means. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. AP, Russian warships causing no ripples in Pentagon. Well, why should they have a ripple? If an atomic bomb fell, they'd have to consult the manual on what to do. If a dirty bomb went off, they'd have to consult the book. And on page 3,942, what did you just say? I'm in the bunker where? I'm in Mississippi, 15,000 feet below the earth. What did you say? A dirty bomb where? Wait, hold on a minute. Let me check. Let me get to the page. Hold on. Dirty bomb, page 12,000. Under dirty bomb, I'm sorry, I'm not authorized to say anything about what you should do. Get back to me in a couple hours. I'll give you some advice. You hear? The government that can't control Wall Street, can't control the military, nothing. Zero. They've abdicated. We have. You know what the word government means? To govern. 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 That means you assume that they have some sagacious qualities, some wisdom, some management ability. But if they had management ability, would they be in government? They would be in. Would they be in government if they had management ability? No. They would be in the private sector while it was still a private sector before it became owned by the government. You know, Washington, D.C., Mike, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please. What's on your mind?
Good evening. I was just I called your I told your screener about Prime Bank scams. This is something that's not new, Mike. You know, this scam of what Bernie or whatever his name is doing, this has been rolling around, and Chris Cox had wind of it a few years ago. The Prime Bank scam comes out on the SEC website from time to time. It's the old you can make all the money you can make. It's inter-traded nightly, overnightly, internationally, monthly, yearly, and the rewards are upwards of 100 to 200% a year. The government knows this is out there. The government, you know, they had a CFTC warning way back when we had a World Trade Center, you know, the old boiler room operators in the 80s.
Yes.
That were doing the commodities.
Yes, I do remember that. There was a near-do-well relative who ran a boiler room.
Okay, the boiler rooms, you know, if the guys from the 80s that were in the boiler room saw this today, they'd be laughing. You know, this has been going on for 25 years. When you say the government's abdicated, the reason everybody's looking the other way, Mike, is because when you look the other way, it looks better right now. Just like Russia, right? Why is you said it on the radio show last month. The reason Russia's here, Mike, is because we were in Georgia. It's very simple.
Yes. Yeah, because of the incompetence of George Bush, Condoleezza Rice, because we encouraged the stooge of ours in Georgia to basically invade Russian territory. That is why Putin is punishing George Bush and the American people with his warships in our hemisphere. That's how I see it.
That's exactly the way you have to see it. I mean, everybody, I'm going to tell you something, Mike. Every 4 years, the maggots move in here from all around the country. So this year, the maggots are going to be coming from Midwest. You see a lot of plates coming in now, the license plates, Kansas, Illinois.
You're
going to have to change your command. And they're all coming in. And the maggots are going to be here, and it's a change of command. Then you're going to have the Obama nation. You know, they're talking about 2 million people showing up. They can't even put a toilet for 6,000 people in this town. But what are you going to do with 2 million? Let me get the dream. They want you to believe it's 2 million. They want to
I hear you. Yeah, he's going to change things. He's going to save the world. He's going to save the world. He's a genius.
What?
He's not a genius. He's the Messiah.
But Mike, why aren't we having a 3 million people march on Washington? Where the hell is my money? That's the march we got.
Well, why? Oh, why? I like your view of things, Mike. You and I would get along. I'll tell you the truth. We see the world the same way. We're from another universe. I live in a parallel universe. I don't live in the Mickey Mouse America. You know, I was thinking about it. Maybe I'm becoming a misanthrope in my older years. I'm somewhat misanthropic. I wasn't always like this. I can't say I was a lover of humanity. I always loved my country. I've always been a Boy Scout. I have, honest to God. I was the kind of jerk that at 11, I got so wrapped up in the get out the vote. I remember to this day, the scoutmaster, Mr. Aronson, may he rest in peace. He lectured us on patriotism and voting and how important it was. And he gave us these little cards to put on doors to get out the vote. I marched around my neighborhood in Queens till around midnight. They called the police. They didn't know where I was. When I get into something, I throw myself into it 1,000% and I forget where I am till it's over. I marched every door, get out the vote, ring-a-ling, ding, you must vote, with my little, you know, neckerchief and then the lanyards with the uniform. I'm surprised I wasn't, whatever. Well, in those days, it was safe for a kid to go around a neighborhood. Today, he wouldn't last too long. He'd wind up as a victim of America's Most Wanted, chopped up in an oil barrel. But I'm saying to you, I mean, I always believed in the country. I didn't really dislike people. I wasn't a person lover. I was leery of people. But today, I'm a little misanthropic. Something's bothering me with everybody I see. So it's a reflection of myself. I admit psychologically that if you reach that point, so it's you, you're reflecting you. But I'm not a guru, so I can't go that far that fast where it's me. I actually think it's them. I don't think it's me. I actually like me. I think it's you, meaning the person out there in Marin County, California. I can't stand them. I tell you why. Let me explain why. I live in one of the most liberal counties on planet Earth. Obama, wherever you go, they're still riding around with the bumper sticker like it gives them a special privilege. Oh, Obama. I have impulses, homicidal impulses, when I see an Obama sticker cut me off. But I control it because I'm a normal person. But I'm talking about child rearing now. Stop it, Teddy. You're making noise. My dog is barking in the studio. He sees I'm getting agitated. I watch the mothers with their children, and I can't stand baby talk to children. And I say, now, is it – I can't stand when they do goo-goo gaga to a kid that's 5 or 6. For example, I'm pushing my bicycle in an open-air outdoor mall after I ride down there. I like to look at people. I'm a people watcher, just for a few minutes a day, because otherwise you become a nut job altogether in talk radio. You sit at home, you read the internet, you read papers and articles. And then you go on the air. You think you're crazy. So you have to see human life. I 101 goes. I watch the mothers and the children, whatever. People buying, selling, get a bad lunch somewhere, and like out. What's it called? The taco place now. What they call it. Wasn't bad. It was not too cold this time. Baja Fresh. I figure I broke the code. I said, let me have the two fish things with the rice and the beans, but leave all the other garbage you put on it, the avocado and the coleslaw, put it on the side because it makes the fish cold. See, senor, I broke the code. The fish came out lukewarm, but thank God I was able to eat. It's worth it for about $4. Anyway, to make a long story, I'm pushing the bicycle on the right side of the mall. I follow the rules. And a little kid, 4 or 5, was with the mother, and he almost walks into my bicycle, and she says to him, oh, look at the bicycle, honey. Are you kidding? Everything, goo-goo. They talk to their children like that, so I got mad. I didn't say anything. I'm not crazy. I burned up inside. I said, why am I getting mad at a mother with baby talk to a boy 5 years old? It's because it's everything wrong with America. I said, well, maybe you're jealous because your father drilled into you that he hated baby talk and he wouldn't ever let anyone talk to you that way. They talk to you from the time you were a little boy as though you were a man. So in other words, I never had a childhood. I've been looking at the world the way it is since I could think, since I could walk. He couldn't wait till I got out of the crib so he could put me to work in a store. So it's a difference of upbringing. All I'm saying to you is Americans live in a world that is totally unreal. They, by the way they talk to their children, I am telling you we are not prepared for anything. Let alone a recession, a depression. You talk about a war? You're talking about a war with, let's say, I don't even want to name the country. You name it. They got guys who could eat snow and live on it. And we have people that right away, they all have disability, need the government to help them. They need medication. First grade already, you got degenerate doctors put your kid on medication when they're 2 years old. How are these children ever going to stand up and defend this nation? Who's going to defend this nation? Where are they? say, well, don't worry about this. Plenty of guys. Yeah, there are, but look at their leaders. They have to consult manuals. They can't even fight a pirate. Remember when we sent three fleets into the Gulf area last year? I said, oh, thank God. That's good. We're showing our force. Three battle groups, three carrier groups. Awesome. Aircraft carrier, cruisers, F-A-18s. Each aircraft carrier has more planes than the average, than any nation on Earth. They don't use them. They don't fire a shot. The rubber boat, a pirate ship can do anything it wants, and we do nothing. Admiral Mullen, Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Mullen. What did he do? Nothing. He didn't know what to do. He said, it's unimportant. There's no threat. India had to take on the pirates. India. India happens to have the fourth largest navy on Earth, by the way. I don't know if you understand that. India is a force to reckon with. Unfortunately, India is run by the same mentality, which is why the Pakistani Islamists were able to bomb Bombay and get away with it. I'll be right back.
Savage.
A handsome young seaman lay dying, and as on the foredeck he lay, two around him his comrades come sighing.
These last mournful words he did say.
Wrap me up in my tarpaulin jacket,
and say a poor duffer's lay low.
Send for six salty seamen to carry me with steps mournful, solemn, and slow.
I love this song. I'm sorry, I like the sea ditties. I like the sea ditties. They make me happy. I like dark music. Why not? One more stanza. Wrap me up in my tarpaulin jacket, and say a poor duffer's lay low. Send for six salty seamen to carry me with steps mournful, solemn, and slow. Of course, today it wouldn't be six salty seamen, it would be sea people. And it wouldn't be six salty seamen, it would be six sea people. And the government, of course, would have to provide the carrier or whatever. Ah, get it off. It's enough already. Look at the stories on my website. U.S. anti-kidnap specialist kidnapped in Mexico. You hear? Mexican gunmen have kidnapped a U.S. security consultant who negotiated the release of dozens of kidnapped victims. He's an anti-kidnap specialist, and he was kidnapped. Just to show you who's running things. Madoff investors face off in Palm Beach. It's an interesting story. It shows two guys with false teeth and gold-rimmed eyeglasses at the country club. They almost came to blows at a Donald Trump event. Beyond the financial fallouts in Palm Beach of the Bernie Madoff scandal, the very social family, formerly rich families will be uprooted. Former friends are at each other's throats while realtors are lining up to grab the expected sales of mansions whose owners lost the millions they invested with. The disgraced Wall Street big one scene at Mar-a-Lago Saturday night illustrates the tension. Several eyewitnesses at the 60th birthday party for Carpet King John Stark tell me that two of the major players in the scandal came face to face. On one side was Bob Jaffe. He is 64. On the other side was, another guy, age 78, Jerome Fisher. So they're starting to hate each other. One of them went up to the guy and says, you've got a lot of nerve showing up here. They were about to go at it, said one spy witness. There was some pushing and yelling, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's a classic. No one ever hits anything. Push, if you, one more push. You just know what it's like in the country club. All right, you push me one more time. You touch me one. Are you touching me? And the guy's pushing him. He's pushing. Are you touching me? He's not touching me. He's pushing him. Are you touching me? Are you threatening me? And the guy's pushing him all over the floor. One more touch and I. And they were about to go at it, said one spy witness. There was some pushing and yelling, blah, blah, blah. Jerome is a tough cookie. He made his really threatening comments. It was a wild scene. Donald Trump was standing nearby. Several Stark well-wishers stepped in and separated the men. It's a good thing they did because nothing would have happened anyway. Neither Fisher, already a victim of the $200 million collapse of the KL Group here in 07, nor Jaffe left. They just avoided one another. Big deal. Big deal. That's why you shouldn't have any friends. A lot of pushing and shoving, and nothing came of it. That's just the beginning of it. Who's going to buy the mansions, though, then, if they come up for sale, the big mansions? Let's say they were worth $30 million last week. Who's going to come in now and buy it for 22? Let's say it's 30% off. The Russian oligarchs, I have another story, are broke. Do you know that the Russian oligarchs who raped the country in order to become oligarchs are now asking the government for a bailout? The guys who robbed the oil, the gas, the silver, the gold, the platinum, the ore, whatever, all the oligarchs are now turning to Putin saying we need to be bailed out. And the government's saying, fine, I want 25% of your company. In other words, the government's coming back and taking over the private companies, and they're becoming a socialist country again, just as we are. Don't you understand? It's all a conspiracy.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
All day long I'd biddy biddy bum if I were a wealthy man.
There's always this friction that goes on between the regulation side of the industry and the practitioners that say, okay, you know, where do you draw the line? You know, regulators would always, you know, and I look, I'm very close with the regulator, so I'm not trying to say that they can't, you know, that what they do is bad. As a matter of fact, my niece just married one.
How much is 10%? I mean, how much money are we talking about?
About $30 million. So okay. It's a fair amount of money. Mm-hmm. Out of the charitable trust has approximately $300 million. So it's still a big chunk of money that was intended to go to, shall we say, worthier causes than Mr. Madoff.
Certainly so. And had that money been allocated? I mean, you're saying it's out of a charitable. Had it already been allocated to go to a specific charitable organization?
Well, some of the money in the trust has been allocated, but a lot of the money has not yet been allocated. And therefore, this will reduce the amount of money that in the future can be allocated to charitable causes, which breaks my heart since I made the money. I put it into a charitable trust to give it away.
If I were a bitty, bitty rich, diddle man, I'd build a big, tall house with rooms by the dozen right in the middle of the town. A fine tin roof with a real window.
Dedicated to the Gulfstream liberals listening to the show. And, of course, what I'm about to thank you very much, Fiddler on the Roof. Cicero, you know my great book, The Enemy Within? That was my number two in the sequel of my four or five in a row. I quoted from Cicero, Roman orator, statesman. 40, I ate some chips just now. I'm having Montezuma's revenge. The salt got to me. I shouldn't have done it. But it's Cicero wrote this in The Enemy Within. A nation can survive its fools and even the ambitious, but it cannot survive treason from within. An enemy at the gates is less formidable, for he is known and carries his banner openly. But the traitor moves amongst those within the gate freely, his sly whispers rustling through all the alleys heard in the very halls of government itself. For the traitor appears not a traitor. He speaks in accents familiar to his victims, and he wears their face in their arguments. He appeals to the baseness that lies deep in the hearts of all men. He rots the soul of a nation. He works secretly and unknown in the night to undermine the pillars of the city. He infects the body politic so that it can no longer resist. A murderer is less to fear. Play Fiddler while I take a drink here.
If I were a rich man,
Now, of course, Cicero was talking about governmental traitors. But they exist here, for example, in the Palm Beach Country Club. Who would have thought that it was your best friend Bernie Madoff that made off with your money, the old joke already that's going around? There's an article we linked up on michaelsavage.com, the Bernie Madoff morality tale. You got to read this one. The next one is even better from the London Times. Carl Shapiro, the man who lost $500 million with Bernie Madoff. Could you hear this? He knew him for 50 years. Personal friend of this Ghanif for more than 50 years. and he entrusted much of his own fortune and nearly half of the assets of a charitable foundation. Gone with the wind. You ever hear numbers like this? So, as I say, the enemy within. Who did it to him? He's sitting there waiting for the swastika and the armband and the umpapa and probably, the enemy from the past. And he didn't know that it was his best friend that he ate bagels with in the country club that was going to do him in. So what's the moral tale? I mean, what's the bottom line here? What is the take-home message of the Madoff tale, the Madoff morality tale? I'll let you figure it out. I think it's different for every person. But we know that on every level, there are people that you have to, distrust. You don't know who to trust anymore. There's so many stories. Goldman Sachs posts first loss since going public. I'm shocked. That's even though they've had a Treasury Secretary now for about 16 years, one way or the other. Finally, they took a dump. They went down. Unbelievable. How does the Treasury Secretary get away with this day in and day out? He gives money away and no one knows who he's giving it to. Where's the government? A government is supposed to govern, and it's answerable to the people. People say through the Associated Press, actually it's through Bloomberg News, who sued the government saying, we want to know where the money went. Paulson said, gave him the middle finger and says, I'm not telling you. Have you ever heard anything like this? Have you ever heard anything like what we're living through today? Never. I think it's the first time in American history. It's all new. It's all new that we have such corruption and incompetence at virtually all levels of government. Corruption and incompetence combined. I don't know. I mean, I'm no expert in history. I'm only an amateur student in history. Amateur, really, you say that with a capital A. That's not my field. There's another field I could say I'm not an amateur, but an amateur historian. I don't know of another period in American history that was this bad. Now, it's true that we had something like this in New York during the Tammany Hall era, but this is on a federal level. And it's true that we have corruption in Chicago that's equal to the Tammany Hall era right now. The same machine that produced Blago produced Obama. I know the media tells you they're not connected. They're lying through their teeth. Obama is part of that machine. That's where he came from. That's where he spawned. That's where he was spawned, is in that machine. They created him. They made him. They picked him. He was the chosen one. He's part of the plan. They bought the presidency. He's the guy to carry the football. Now let's see what he does. You know what I mean? But don't tell me they don't know where he came from. They created him. But on a federal level now, when has it ever been this corrupt? Does anyone know? We know that General Grant was corrupt after the Civil War. But I don't know that it was this, this level of meltdown. I have no idea. If you care to call the show on this or any other topic, don't bother. The phone number is 1-800-449-825. There's a great story you must read before it's thrown off the site. I got it from the Palm Beach Post. It's on the bottom of michaelsavage.com. Veterans gather to mark historic Battle of the Bulge. It says, the funny thing about the men who died in the forest that winter is they never get old. Here their friends are crowded in a ballroom in West Palm Beach. These are guys 90 years old who survived the Battle of the Bulge in World War II. They were not in the back lines. These were guys who fought in the Battle of the Bulge. Many of them were wounded, and they're 80 and 90, 85, 90 years old. It's heartbreaking. Well, it's heart-wrenching, I mean, to read this thing, to see these guys who fought 64 years ago in the frozen mountains of Belgium and France against the army of Adolf Hitler's Third Reich. And to see them here, as they look today and as they look then, it was a very touching story. This is news. See, this is when newspapers were good. They did stories like this. You compare that to the dreck that's put out by the San Francisco Chronicle. The dreck, like a sewer, a bad sewer pipe. Nothing in it. Even their website, which used to be good, there's nothing in it anymore. Unless it's about Proposition 8 and attacking Mormons, you don't see the story. Nothing. This is a great article. Here's a guy, and so this, I'm showing, the reason the story attracted me is because this is the other side of Palm Beach. This is West Palm Beach. These are not the billionaires. These are the regular guys who retired in Florida, some of whom survived World War II. You got to read the story and print it out. You see the guy when he was 20 with the rifle, the M1, and here he is now. Here's a guy, retired Brigadier General Al Erzik, left the World War II battalion tank commander, full of life, talking, telling his tales. Here's a guy, Stein, Murray Stein, now 83, and living in Delray Beach, whose entire regiment was captured after 4 days of fighting. Murray Stein, a mortar man, was standing in the forest with his sergeant setting up a mortar position when a sniper's bullet passed by his face and hit the sergeant between the eyes. Stein took shrapnel to the knee, was imprisoned at Stalag 4B south of Berlin, where he remained until U.S. soldiers freed him in June of 1945. These stories are amazing. Stein's 106th Infantry Division suffered the worst casualties of the Ardennes battle, with 9,261 soldiers, or about 289 men per day, killed, wounded, or missing in the night. Are you listening to this? The Allies won the Battle of the Bulge at a cost of more than 80,000 American casualties. About 19,000 U.S. soldiers died. Now, let's go back to what I was talking about earlier.
Hey, buddy, Hey, did you take your Ritalin? Oh, honey, baby, look at the bicycle. Can I buy you lunch now, honey, bye?
I'll be right back.
Savage.
With all of the bailouts being pushed by our government, the mortgages, the banks, the auto industry, and now investors, how are we ever going to be able to afford any of this? There is a system in place right now that could save the big three automakers without having to spend enormous amounts of hard-earned taxpayer dollars. You know what it's called? It's called bankruptcy. Joining us today to talk about this option is Elisa Lappin, a former associate editor of Forbes, who wrote an article entitled Three for Chapter 11. Elisa, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thank you very much for having me on again. I'm delighted to be here.
Give us some background on your article. What do you think is going on here?
Well, I think that Congress feels they have to do something because they did so much for the banks. Now, mind you, the bank bailouts were not handled very well, and they keep changing their minds about how that $700 billion is going to be spent. You know, are they going to buy stock? Are they going to back up sour mortgages? Are they going to bail out people whose mortgages are failing and buy the homes? What are they going to do? So now the auto giants are coming in line and saying, hey, we want money. First it was $50 billion, then it was $25 billion, and now we're down to $14 billion just to tide them over for a couple of months. But the whole idea is stupid because it's just delaying the inevitable. They need to go into Chapter 11.
If the problem with the big three is that they're not run well, the bailout isn't going to help the companies very much with a government bureaucrat running the companies, is it?
No, it's really not. I mean, they need to trim their employment benefits, and the union has to negotiate. And they were willing to negotiate with Congress up to a point, but that's political. In Chapter 11, the judges make the decisions, ultimately. You negotiate, and if the judge thinks that one party is asking too much or giving too little, they decide unilaterally that, no, this is the way it's going to be, and the court makes the decision. Now, the unions have to give up. That's all there is to it. I mean, there's no way you can pay somebody $60,000 a year and then give them $60,000 a year in benefits, too. It's ridiculous.
Well, whenever the talk of bankruptcy comes up, they always mention liquidation.
No. Chapter 11 is reorganization. And actually, I didn't realize this myself, but apparently Chapter 11 bankruptcy was developed in the 19th century for railroads when they weren't making money and the railroad magnates were threatening to tear up the rails and melt them and sell the scrap, and Congress realized that the better way to do it was to keep them as going concerns and try to get profits, which of course was accomplished. So Chapter 11 bankruptcy reorganization came into being, and in Chapter 11, companies go under protection of the court and they reorganize their assets. They get protection from their creditors. The creditors have to negotiate down what they're owed. The companies need to negotiate some givebacks. The labor needs to negotiate. Everybody plays a role in negotiating a final outcome. And if it's a viable business, which these companies are viable, I mean, they're not going to go belly up. They're not going to completely close down all their factories and lay off 3.5 million people. It's not going to happen. I mean, people are still buying cars. They just need to trim and become more efficient and they need to compete with the foreign automakers, which are efficient and selling cars.
There have been businesses who have prospered after Chapter 11. It happens all the time.
Absolutely. Very good point. The six major airlines, including United, Delta, Northwest, and Continental, all filed for Chapter 11 at various points in the last 20 years, and they all emerged from Chapter 11 reorganization with real hopes for profit. And the same thing happened with large companies, steel companies, and small companies. We had National Steel, Bethlehem Steel, Wheeling Pittsburgh, Kaiser, Bayou, Weirton Steel. I mean, the list is as long as my arm. Many others also used Chapter 11 to emerge as either standalone companies or they sold themselves leaner and meaner to competitors.
Don't you think greed is the main reason for the big three's reluctance in filing Chapter 11?
One of the things that has to happen in Chapter 11 is that the management has to be paid a reasonable wage, and that means not excessive. So, you know, these companies have not done very well, and there's not going to be a lot of demand for the chief executive officers. They haven't exactly done wonders with their firms. And they're going to have to lower their salaries. They're going to have to lower their benefits. And, of course, the unions will have to lower their benefits, and the unions have been really putting pressure on Congress, too. It's not just management. It's the unions also. I mean, unions are a wonderful thing up to a point, but, you know, you can't make more than the market can afford to pay. It's then somebody else is going to be hurt. And we're not a socialist country, but capitalism has balances and checks, too. You know, everybody's worried, well, the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, that's the U.S. Pension guarantee arm, would have to take over these underfunded pension funds. But in fact, they're not underfunded. GM has 400,000 retirees, and that pension fund is overfunded by almost $20 billion. And its salary workers plan is overfunded by $500 million. They do have a shortfall for hourly workers of $500 million, but that could be made up by the other overfunded plans, which could also possibly balance some of the other inequalities within the Chapter 11 court system when, as and if it gets there, which I hope it does.
Elisa Lappin, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
It's been a pleasure being on your show again, Michael. Thank you so much for having me. I look forward
Savage.
To joining you again.
If I were a rich man, yeah, dear, 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 all day long I'd biddy, biddy, bum. If I were a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work hard.
Well, there's two new Madoff updates on the Savage Nation. Here's one. Madoff case fuels attacks on the SEC. They're wondering, why didn't the SEC do his job? Why is Christopher Cox not in an orange jumpsuit? So listen, listen to who's going to look into the SEC, whether it failed or not. Bonnie Frank and Christopher Dodd. Bonnie Frank is going to be in charge of the investigation as to see if anything went wrong at the SEC. Can you believe this? How this government is so broken from top to bottom. Bonnie Frank is the special investigator. He doesn't have his hands full enough because he's such a genius on monetary matters. I mean, he managed Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac so well. Now he's going to look into how the SEC may or may not have failed. And he says, in due course, there'll be appropriate action. I certainly hope it's appropriate, Bonnie, but with you, God only knows. There's another Madoff story that's up now on MichaelSavage.com, which is that Madoff tries to stay out of jail as probe widens. This just came out. Because many of us are saying, why is he out of jail? Why is he not in jail awaiting trial? Guy like this? Listen to this. This is amazing. I just put it up on MichaelSavage.com. Madoff tries to stay out of jail as probe widens. Why? What do you mean trying to stay out of jail? Apparently, although they let him out on a $10 million bond, according to court papers, the Ghanif must find three co-signers to guarantee the bond. And if the Ghanif, in my opinion, Ghanif is a old lower German word for thief. If the Ghana fails to meet all the conditions, prosecutors could seek to have the 70-year-old Madoff jailed pending trial. A court hearing was set for tomorrow on bail matters after a Tuesday hearing was postponed. Already postponed. There we go already. That's the game, by the way. Postpone, postpone, postpone. Deny, deny, deny. Postpone, postpone. Deny, deny. Wait for the new administration. Smear off anyone that you can find. And then it'll be tried in 3 to 5 years in Holland before the International Court of Fact Boxology. So he's got to find relatives now to co-sign a loan. Like when I was a kid, I got a car loan. He needed co-signers. Scramble to find relatives or friends to guarantee his bond on Tuesday to keep him out of jail. What relative would sign a bond with this guy? They know they're going to go down with him. I mean, even if they wanted to help him, if they put their name on a bond, wouldn't they be suspect in some way? Oh, yeah. Oh, he's a great guy. We stand behind you, Bernie. Trouble like this is nothing. We're family. We are family right now. Celebrate right now. Bernie, we're all family. We all want to sign a bond with you. So there is hope yet. U.S. Senator Charles Schumer, a New York Democrat, received $12,000 from Madoff. He gave $238,000 to political candidates, parties, and committees, mostly the Democratic since 1991. 12 grand he gave to Schumer. Look how cheap these guys are. What pieces of work they are. A prostitute would charge more. A hooker, probably, I would guess a hooker could make more than that on a night in Las Vegas, a top flight hooker than Schumer made over 12 years or 14 years from Madoff. It's amazing to me how cheap they are. I didn't know you could buy a senator for so little. To change legislation like this? To keep the SEC off his back? It only cost them $12,000 over 14 years? Man, they're cheap. Did you know they were that cheap? Why are they so inexpensive? I thought it would cost more. 12 grand to buy favors like that. Let's see. Ex-gangster faces life sentence for killing police. That's somewhere in Japan. I'm not interested with the Yakuza. We were interested in the Yakuza for a while. Remember that was like hot in the 80s? The Yakuza movies of Michael Douglas. With a lot of cars and oil slicks. Nagoya. What do you expect over there? They cut off their fingers for honor. I don't know. Well, I could tell some jokes now about what they should do here, but for honor. Honor amongst thieves with regard to the Madoff clan. But it wouldn't be cutting off a finger for honor. It would be something else. I'm talking self-mutilation now. But we're not going to go there. It's inappropriate for me to even let my mind drift into that arena because I'm not in a nightclub. I'm on a talk radio show where I have to watch my P's and Q's and tell you only about 99.9% of what I actually believe. If you want to see 100% of what I believe, forget about it. You'll never hear that. That's reserved for my dog. 2008, the coolest year of the century, but the U.S. scientists are still pursuing. You know, this is what gets to me. Obama now is coming in. And who does he? Carol Browner of the EPA is now going to be a czar of global warming or whatever. So here's the thing. Now, set up a government machine to look into and stop global warming, carbon this, carbon control, and CO2 emissions. They're shivering. They're shivering inside their rooms. They can't stop. They're like lunatics. It's like a lunatic asylum. Even when the facts hit them in the face that there is no global warming, and even if it's a slight 0.1 degree Celsius over the last century, and is caused by sunspots or by some volcanic activity beneath the crust of the Earth, they still, once they create the government machinery, they will not stop pushing this nonsense down your children's throats and taxing you and crippling the economy even further. How do we get control of a government that is filled with outright crooks and outright lunatics? How do you get control of a government like this? It seems to me that there are outright crooks and outright morons running the government. Play him for me. Rich Man. I want to hear Rich Man.
I wouldn't have to work hard.
I wouldn't have to work hard. I work hard because I like it. I don't know any better. I don't know how to stop working. That's my problem. Every time I try to stop working, I got in trouble. Remember when you were a kid, there were signs. The people were so nice in my generation, the parents. You could rely on them. I didn't know one person in the entire collection of people in my family and around surrounding who was a crook. Admittedly, in the storybook, I tell a fat guy with the tippy, with the, he owned a, He ran a thing in a hotel for, okay, but he didn't rob anybody. He gave him service for the money, I mean, as it turns out. And he took in a love child or two and he raised them on his own. That didn't make him a bad man. He's better than Bernie Madoff. So he ran a little thing in a hotel down there in Manhattan. So what? Who did he hurt? He provided good service for the money. I didn't know what he did. He's a nice, roly-poly fat guy. And as I said, in the book, you could read Psychological Nudity. When one of the prostitutes had got pregnant, they didn't abort it. They didn't abort it. He brought it home and raised it as his own. This was the pimp in the place. Can you believe this story? Unless it was his love child, but even still, they didn't abort it. He raised two of them on his own. That's a different universe of humanity. But as I say, nobody was a crook in those days. They were lovely people. Everybody was honest. They were just as good as gold. What happened? There certainly were crooks, but how did crookedness become the norm in America? When did it happen? When did it become okay to be crooked, a degenerate, a pervert, a drug addict? When did that happen? How did it all go off the rails? Well, it's a long story. It started in the 1960s with the advent of the anti-hero put forward by the degenerates in the media, mainly in Hollywood and in the world of fiction writing, where they started to want to show the anti-hero as hero and the hero as anti-hero. We now have reached a point where the scum of the earth are held up as role models. You understand this or not? Am I making a point that makes any sense to you? Or is this something you need a cold drink for and a cocktail waitress going by to understand? I think I'm going to have to start doing nightclub, even though it's a step down from radio, because everyone in the nightclub circuit wants a radio show. Impossible to do. Can't make the transition. I could make the transition the other way because it's easy. You cannot go from television to radio. There's a schmuck with a mustache who looks like, he thinks he's going to make it in radio. Oh, I can't wait. They listen to every word I say, and they think they could duplicate me just by making a New York voice. Hey, I'm from New York. I'm like Michael Savage. Yeah, my syndicator gets tapes every day, says he laughs at them. They think that they're either Rush or Michael Savage. That's what they try to imitate. You know, there was a survey done a number of years ago. Did you know about this? About, like, the most recognizable names in the media. The number one in the radio was Rush. Number two was Michael Savage. I don't know if you knew that. It's unbelievable. I didn't know that. Someone reminded me of that the other day. But there's something to be said for doing a live performance. You know, you got to keep in touch with the audience. The feedback. The feedback in a nightclub, but I don't know. You got to get into the whole scene, the agent, and you got to arrange it, fly to Vegas for the weekend. I might like that. I actually have a place in Vegas I never go to. Would you believe that? I don't go there. Family has a place there. I never go to it. I go once in a while. I enjoy the Italian food. I know two haunts already that are good. Why does everyone put on airs in Italian restaurants? Why can't they just go and eat? Even if a guy's a dentist from Bayonne already, he makes believe he was in The Sopranos. Why can't he just be a dentist from Bayonne? Why do everyone put on the act with a certain look? I don't know. Because the guys who are there, they make believe they're the dentist. The guy who actually is the hitter, he makes believe he's the dentist from Bayonne. And the schmuck who's the dentist makes believe he's the hard-headed guy. Why is the world upside down? Can anyone explain that to me? Huh? We get too soon old and too late smart. Remember I told you there were signs on the walls? I was getting to that when I was a kid. We had what is known in my neighborhood as finished basements. If you had a finished basement, what's a finished basement? Knotty pine walls and maybe a fake bar. And the people who had a good one, they had the kids could put on the parties, which was fun. We didn't have one. All my life I wanted a finished basement, but we didn't have the money to finish it or whatever. It was a small house. It wasn't worth finishing. So no one finished it. I always liked the finished bay. My friends had a bigger house, and we had the parties. That's where you first went, where you danced till you stuck to the person from sweat and getting too much alcohol or whatever when the parents were away. And you played rock and roll such as, could you play Any My Love? I want to set the mood now for this story. I want to drift back in time to another time. Innocent time. Yeah, that kind of thing. Bumping and grinding with a girl. Nothing wrong with it. It's human nature. What do you think? It's dirty to love a girl? Well, I'm not talking San Francisco. I'm talking the rest of America, where it's still okay and normal to love a girl and get married and have children. It's illegal in San Francisco. I understand the mayor wants to put a tax on children because it's somehow against the social mores to raise a child in San Francisco. They're going to put a special child tax in San Francisco. Why didn't Schwarzenegger come up with that? Tax white people for having children. Just let the illegals have 25 children. Okay, yeah, all right. There we go. Fayetti, my love again. I'm not ready. I'm just still warming up. I don't know how the show is going. Where am I going to go tonight? I think I'm taking a jet to Vegas. Because as Harpo Marx, he was right. They asked Harpo what he thought about the stock market. He said he prefers a casino because there's cold drinks and women. Maybe a 200, 400 seat theater, amphitheater with drinks. Could do like two shows on a Saturday night, probably charge $200 a head. It's a whole shtick. But what do you want to talk about, huh? It's the Savage Nation. Don't get too worked up because most of you didn't lose a nickel with Madoff. You weren't smart enough to have the money to give him, number one. And number two, he wouldn't have taken your money because you weren't a member of the club. What are you going to do? Madoff is nothing, as I said to you. The guy who, you know, ripped everyone off for, what, they say $50 billion. Turn it off already with the Eddie. It's nothing compared to the U.S. government itself. You got the Social Security Ponzi scheme. And as I said at the beginning of the show, every governor is, in essence, Madoff. Why do I say every governor is the same as this Ghanif, this crook, Madoff? Why do I say it? Well, let me explain it to you another way. Here in the state of California, our Ghanif crook governor takes 10.5% of everyone's income tax, 9.5%, 10.5%. And where does the money go? Tell me where the money goes that stays bankrupt. If the Ghanif came in, Arnold Schwarzenegger, the cream puff, and said he would clean up the mess left by the Democrat before him, and within a year he hires the chief of staff for the Democrat, a lesbian by the name of Kennedy, by the way, and then the next thing you know, he has a budget deficit of $42 billion. Tell me how he's any different than Bernie Madoff. Can you explain it to me? What, because it's legal that he did it and it wasn't your money? It is your money. It is your money. It's your tax money that he ripped you off with. Don't you understand? Now let's go to the federal government. Bush comes in with a budget surplus from Clinton, whatever. You may not have liked Clinton, but those were different times. I understand, blah, blah, blah. It was a budget surplus and it was all jury-rigged. And the next thing you know, we're running a deficit that no one in the world could believe could ever be fixed. You're telling me Bush isn't the same as Madoff? Where'd all the money go? Who made off with your tax dollars? They throw a shoe at him. The Secret Service can't even stop the shoe. Okay? What good is a central government that cannot protect you from the crooks of Wall Street, cannot protect you on any level? I don't understand it. It seems to me that the central government has either collapsed or abdicated, or it's run by complete fraud artists or complete incompetence. That's one man's opinion. Tell me if you think I am wrong. I'll be back to take your calls.
Savage.
Washington, the SEC's head of enforcement ducked questions about the SEC's failure to detect the alleged fraud.
It is hard to directly respond given the fact that so much of what we've done historically is non-public and needs to remain non-public until such time as someone decides otherwise.
But Madoff's victims aren't buying that.
It was a total collapse of the Securities and Exchange Commission ability to police. Total. There's no excuse. There's no reason. We lost our money because the federal government didn't know what they were doing.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. Only the difference is they did know what they were doing. They looked the other way, in my opinion. That's from ABC's Nightline last night that did a fabulous report on this story. Governor David Patterson, the genius, the great genius, has unveiled a New York State budget that is filled with new taxes, an iPod tax that will charge state and local sales tax for songs on your iPod. There will be a state sales tax at movie theaters, sporting events, taxis, buses, limos, cable and satellite TV, and radio. Did you know any of this? Tuition increases at SUNY and CUNY, $620 and $600 a year, respectively. A 50-cent increased tax on cigars. The current tax is, 37% of the wholesale price, or 34 cents a cigar. Higher taxes on wine, beer, and flavored malt beverages. 18% tax on non-nutritional drinks like soda. Luxury tax, 5% on cars costing more than 60 grand. 5% on aircraft costing more than $500,000. 5% on yachts costing at least $200,000. And 5% on jewelry and furs costing in excess of $20,000. Now, of course, this psycho, this lunatic, this nobody who was put into this position simply because the crooks of Wall Street destroyed Spitzer. And I want to go back. The governor of New York, whether you liked him or not, Spitzer, was the sheriff of Wall Street, and he was about to crack down on the gangsters who have wrecked our economy when they pulled a plug on him because they're very smart. They have a lot of money. They knew his weakness. They knew the hooker thing. They had access to the credit cards and the billing. He was foolish in the way he paid for it. They pulled the plug. They bounced him out through shame, and they put this dunce in. So this dunce now, Patterson, thinks that by taxing the so-called rich, he's going to improve the economy. He will destroy New York's economy. The man doesn't even understand the basics of an economy. This jerk, Patterson, in my opinion, couldn't run a souvlaki stand on 43rd Street, let alone the state of New York. How do you people put up with it? I don't understand this. Every level of government, there's another incompetent. When you punish the people with money, what happens is they stop spending. The people with money, did you know that in the state of California, is it the richest 1% in California? The richest 1% of income earners in the state of California pay 50% of the state income tax. Are you aware of that? So now let's see what happens when the cream puff Schwarzenegger suddenly imposes, coming out of California, let's say the cream puff from Austria decides to impose a tax on that 1%, an increased tax. Now, the upper 1% in the state of California pay 10.5% state income tax. I didn't say federal, state income tax, the highest in the country. It's 10.5% is paid on top of federal and local and whatever. Let's say the cream puff says, all right, I'm going to tax another 1% or another 3% of the top 1% of income earners in the state of California. Let us say 50,000 of those people decide to leave the state. Tell me what happens if they pay now 50% of, if they pay or account for 50% of all the income, of the state income, and 50,000 of them leave, it will cause a downturn in the income in the state of California, not an increase. So the minute you start taxing luxury items and start taxing the rich, what you do is you destroy the economy. It's the exact opposite of what these hacks, these Soviet bloc hacks, are doing, the exact opposite of what needs to be done. Now, before I conclude tonight, I want to say again, by lowering interest rates, once again, the gangsters in the Fed have destroyed the economy even further. They should be raising the rates to encourage savings. In order to encourage savings, you need to provide an incentive through interest. And so they're doing the exact opposite. They're doing the wrong thing at the wrong time, creating a perfect storm. It's going to get worse. Good night.
Savage.